Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Brighton, Michigan, and earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from Central Michigan University. He's been covering sports and the news in Southeast Michigan for 36 years. Since 2004, he's been the senior anchor slash reporter with WXYZ Action News. He's also the president of the Rainbow Connection, which provides wishes for Michigan children with life-threatening illnesses. A four-time Emmy winner, his name, Dave Llewellyn. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dave Llewellyn, Southeast Michigan's own Dick Clark. Welcome back home. First, welcome back home.
Thank you. Yes, this is these studios, although, Jack, it was the 21st floor when I had a college internship in the summer of 1978, and got to work in this tremendous building and at this radio station, meeting so many of the people that I grew up listening to and admired and wanted to be like. And what a thrill it was, and what a start it provided for me to then go on and pursue this for a career.
Let's go back even earlier. Talk mm-hmm. about your childhood and your mom and your dad, Dave.
I grew up in Brighton, Michigan. We were, I would say, a typical family. I have three sisters, two older, one younger. My dad was a state trooper in his early adult years, left the police business when he started having a family because he didn't feel that it was the life for a family man. Got into the insurance business. So as I say, I've got two older sisters, one younger. Attended all the schools, public schools in Brighton. Loved the community. It's a great place to grow up. Played sports in high school, baseball, football, basketball. Enjoyed that. And went on to college in at Central Michigan and pursued an interest that I had from the time that I was a small child, and that was newspapers, sports. I thought I wanted to be a sports writer when I grew up, and really knew that from the time that I was 10, 11 years old. My grandparents did a fair amount of traveling after retirement, my mother's parents. Spent time in Florida winters, Arizona winters, and traveled quite a bit in between. And they would always bring back newspapers from all these big cities that they would visit because they knew I loved newspapers. And it was like Christmas every time I would see them, and they would give me a newspaper from Albuquerque or from Memphis or any of the cities in Florida or Arizona that they might have spent time in. And I would read them, and I would go over them, and I just loved newspapers from that early age, and that was the career direction that I thought I wanted to take.
How did you ever break into broadcasting?
It was just a kind of a continuation from that, but when I got to high school, I was editor of the high school newspaper, editor of the yearbook. Then when I got to college, it was the first opportunity to do any hands-on radio work or television work. And I just decided that there was an excitement about that that maybe newspapers didn't have. And I just felt that I wanted to go in that direction. And so I got involved with the student radio station, then television after that. And it's just decided that that's the path that I wanted to follow. But studied journalism, the writing, the reporting. I like to be able to gather information and be the first one to tell somebody what I've discovered.
Johnny Giannopoulos often tells me that I have a great face for radio. You have a great face for TV. What you got into sportscasting.
Mm-hmm.
What do all great sportscasters have in common?
Well, I think a love of sports and a passion for it. I would have loved to have been a professional athlete. Wasn't in the cards, you know, didn't have those gifts. But what a wonderful thing it was to be able to, you know, go to the games, be in the locker rooms, talk to the athletes, talk to those individuals who had those gifts and made the most of them. To me, that was the best of all worlds, right? I love to write, love to report, love sports, combine all that, you know, and what's better than that?
Speaking of the best, arguably the most beloved man in the history of Michigan is Ernie Harwell. Tell us about Mr. Harwell.
My relationship with Ernie started no different than many the young people who started out in broadcasting. It was at Tiger Stadium, kind of intimidated by the whole thing. You're on the field during batting practice, before the game, with a microphone and a tape recorder, you know, with the idea that I'm going to interview one of the Tigers, because that's what I was sent there to do. Who comes over to me first, makes me feel like I belong? Ernie Harwell, sticking out his hand and saying, "Hi, I'm Ernie Harwell," like I didn't know it was Ernie Harwell. But he did that to me, he did that to so many, and every time then I would go back and see him, it was, "Hi, Dave," you know, and it was Ernie Harwell. He was just, he was the best, not only at his craft of baseball play-by-play, and I'm one of those kids that listened from the early 1960s, you know, to him broadcast the Tiger games, and so then to feel like you could be in his company and have him know your name and be welcomed by him, it's pretty cool.
There are certain people we've watched for decades tell us about the sporting events. Kurt Gowdy, mm-hmm. Brent Musburger. And there's a man from Ann Arbor. It's hard to believe he's been doing it for 25 years. Mike Tirico.
He is so talented and so versatile. And that's the thing that I appreciate so much about Mike, whether it's football or it's golf, the Olympics now. I mean, you name it, he does it, and he does it all well. And he makes it, and that's the mark to me of a real pro, is someone who makes it look or sound so easy. And he certainly is one of those, I would say, rarest of individuals who makes it, whatever the sport, whatever the venue, makes it look and sound so easy.
We're talking to Dave Llewellyn. When we come back, we'll ask him about some other legendary local sportscasters. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dave Llewellyn, who's been covering sports and news in Southeast Michigan for the last 36 years. Some of the legendary local sportscasters: Dave Dials, Al Ackerman, Ray Lane, Don Shane.
The first three gentlemen you mentioned are people that I grew up watching. And then I had the fortune, good fortune, of working with Don for 20 years, you know, at Channel 7. Dave Dials, I got to know when we were doing University of Michigan football games at CKLW. Dave came in to do the play-by-play. And what a storyteller. And boy, he could cut you so quick with a barb, a jab. What a quick wit and what a smart guy. Ray Lane, just, you know, he all-American guy, right? I mean, Ray, just incredible. And Ackerman, Al Ackerman, that sarcastic, negative, kind of different, edgy approach at the time, you didn't see much of it in terms of what he did and the way he poked people and the way he presented things. Distinctive guys, all of them, their own style. And I think that's part of the reason that they were all very, very successful. And then Don, you know, came to Detroit originally at Channel 4, then left the market, went to Chicago, Boston, came back. We hired him at Channel 7 to be our sports director, and had a tremendous run here in Detroit.
The voice of God, Paul Carey, you eulogized him at his memorial service.
I did, and what an honor that was to be asked to do that by Paul before he passed. And you know, he. You mentioned it, the voice of God. He certainly had that. But a man with a heart of gold, too. And someone that you looked up to so much. At least I did, certainly, and so many others. Because he was really quite a shy guy, but in person. He was the, you know, Ernie was the guy out front, you know. But Paul was there, and they were a great team. And he told me, in an interview, and when Ernie passed, that he loved the fact that it was Ernie and Paul and Ernie, you know, that friendship and that team for so many years together in the broadcast booth. And what a giant, not just because of, you know, the Tiger broadcast and all, but what a gift he gave to high school athletes all over the state of Michigan. Because for years after he did the 11:15 sports on WJR, he stayed and at midnight did the high school football and basketball scoreboard, where with WJR's tremendous signal that could be heard literally across the state and all these other states in the Midwest and Canada as well, Paul gave the high school football and basketball scores on Friday nights. And this was before the internet, folks. I mean, you couldn't get the scores until the following morning in the newspaper unless you were listening to Paul Carey. And if you played sports, if your parents, you wanted to hear how your rivals did that night, how the other teams in your league did that night, or you just wanted to hear your team's score of the football or basketball game that you just played. And Paul did that for so many, you know, high school kids. He was so important to high school sports in this state.
We're talking to Dave Llewellyn. Dave, we're watching this Detroit just transform before our very eyes by the week.
Yeah.
But back in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, you know, it was dead. There's no hope. It never come back. And the Pistons and the Red Wings really were the hope that kept us going. Talk about that.
Well, and that's one of the, when the Wings finally won after 42 years in 1997, win the Stanley Cup, it was so important, you know, for this city, not to mention the franchise, because, you know, the Wings are beloved, but it struggled for such a long time. But to see that and be part of that and see that team grow into a championship team was fantastic. And then to win it the following year and just the success that they've had. And then the Pistons at Cobo. You know, when I was a kid, Dave Bing and Bob Lanier and, you know, those teams, which were some good teams, but not quite good enough. And then the decision to move to the Silverdome. And then finally, you know, to the Palace where Isaiah and the Bad Boys won. And then in 2004, you know, with the team that Dumars put together, a team devoid of superstars, really won again. How important, you know, that was. And now, kind of full circle, the Pistons coming back downtown, which is, I think, going to be a tremendous thing, though some of us are a little bit sorry to see what might happen to the Palace just because of the memories that were created there.
Those Pistons back at Cobo, Chris Ford, John Mengelt,
yes,
remember?
Yes, I do.
Huh? Wow. You've got four Emmys. Where do you keep them?
They're on a shelf in the living room, prominently displayed. I'm proud of them.
Very few sports reporters have successfully matriculated to be a news anchor. You started that process right at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You've one of the few that have done it successfully. What were the keys?
I think part of it is just the fact that while I was always involved in sports, I did have an interest in what was going on around me, interested in reading and politics and current events, just generally speaking. So, you know, I was always interested in things that were going on, and particularly in the political end of things, and how things came together, how deals came together and the like. So the transition for me, and it was put to me, we think this is a better career option for you going forward. And in some ways, I think that has proven to be true. On other days, I've wanted to run back to sports, you know, just because, you know, it's more pleasant some days, frankly, right? If you're out on a murder scene or a bad traffic act, some days the sports thing is just nicer and cleaner, you know? But it's worked out for me. It has. And it's allowed me to continue to grow, you know, in this business. And to me, that's been important, too.
We've watched you on WXYZ TV since 1988. 29 years. Wow. You haven't aged a day. WXYZ signed on in October of 48. Tell us about WXYZ TV.
Well, it's been home. And it's for me, it's been tremendous. It's been a stable place. It has been a responsible operation. You know, we take very seriously, we want to be first, but most important, we want to be accurate, you know, and we hold that very dear, and that's the way we try to go about our business each and every day. And there's been a stability there. There's been, you know, it's worked with what kind of my philosophy of what the business is. You're not bigger than the story. The story is the thing, and reporting the story and getting the story accurate and presenting that. From that standpoint, it's been a perfect place for me.
We're talking to Dave Llewellyn. When we come back, we'll talk about one man who was bigger than the story, the king, Bill Botts. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Dave Llewellyn, who takes the lead role in WXYZ's Project 2020 project. The king, the showman, Bill Botts.
One of a kind. Never to be seen again in this market. What a communicator, newsman, and a guy who made himself the story much more than we certainly see today or ever will again, frankly. But, you know, carried it off. And people loved the guy, hated the guy, but was one of those personalities that even if you didn't like him, you had to watch because you didn't know what he was going to say next or do next. And what a success. And to the very end, Bill Botts thought he should still be on the anchor chair at Channel 7. And in fact, he would call sometimes on the weekends when I would be there. If the Lions were playing and they were, you know, playing like the Lions typically played more often than not, other than 2016, which has been pretty good, he would call and he would get me on the phone and he would tell me what I should say about the Lions and the way they were playing. I mean, that was Bill.
We had him several years ago. The first segment's supposed to be 7 minutes. I never asked him a question. He just took the mic, and for 11, I couldn't get, 11 and a half minutes later, I finally, he took a pause, and I said, when we get back. Unbelievable. Okay, his partner, Diana Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Dear friend, she made her own mark, but was very deferential, you know, to Bill. But Bill was very respectful of Diana as well. They had a very successful partnership. I mean, Bill was Bill, and Bill was going to be Bill. But Diana was there, supported him, but at the same time, she's a very proud woman, and has accomplished and did accomplish a lot in her career, really, as a trailblazer. African-American female in news, on an anchor desk, I mean, and a consummate pro. And so that was a very, very successful partnership for a lot of years. And, you know, when she finally retired, you know, Bill was there. And so that relationship continued even outside of the studio. Were they best of friends? Did they travel in social circles together? I don't think so much, but tremendous respect between them and a wonderful partnership that Channel 7 and our viewers benefited from for years and years.
The circle of life, Mr. Llewellyn.
Yes, sir.
We're watching an entire generation of ESPN announcers retire.
Mm-hmm.
Or past John Saunders, the Boomer, Lou Holtz, on and on and on. And likewise, the same scenario with the Detroit sportscasters and newscasters.
Yes, and I've lived it. Trust me, I am now the senior member of the Channel 7 news team. And it was 1988, January 25th, I think, when I walked into the station to start my first day. And it doesn't seem that long ago, frankly. And to think that now, because of Jerry Hodak and Diana and Robbie Timmons and Don Shane and on and on, Bill Proctor and Cheryl Choden and all these people that have, you know, now moved on, to think that, you know, I'm the senior member of this team, it's still hard for me to, you know, to get my arms around. But what a group of professionals that I've had the privilege of learning from and working with all of these years. And that's one of the things that has been so nice about our operation, too, is that, you know, everybody has been supportive of each other, you know, on a story or on, you know, a difficulty that has come up. I mean, there's been a great team aspect to it. And I hope that continues. I hope I'm part of, you know, making sure that continues to happen by bringing some of these new people that we have and making them feel the same way that these then veterans made me feel.
Speaking of hard to get your arms around, most of us listeners and viewers, we wonder, Llewellyn, what do you guys do all day?
I have that question a little bit. So what do you do after you work for your half hour or your hour? Well, there's a lot that...
How often do you get the haircut? Okay.
Every 3 weeks. Yeah. There's a lot that obviously goes into that half-hour or hour-long broadcast. And there are a lot of people, different than radio, when I started, where, you know, when I was doing sports here at WJR, it was just you and the booth and the microphone, you know. Television, it's a much different animal in that you've got, you know, writers and producers and associate producers and all the people in the director and the assistant director and the audio, all those people are involved in the finished product. And so so it's different. So you're writing, you're going over scripts, you've got promos to shoot. There's a lot of things you got to get your makeup on, you know. Another reality of the TV versus the radio. So there's a lot that is involved in a lot of work that goes into being ready, hopefully, for that broadcast. And then it repeats itself, you know, into the evening for the 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock newscast as well.
Years ago, we had Rhonda Walker mm-hmm. as a guest. Great person. And she's fixing her hair and fixing the makeup. And I said, Rhonda, this is radio. We're talking to Dave Llewellyn. And he's the president of the Rainbow Connection, which was formed in 1985 because of L. Brooks Patterson.
Oakland County executive lost his best friend, Ron Dobson, in a plane crash in Canada. They were heading to a wedding, Ron with his wife, Janet, and two children. Janet survived. Ron was killed. The two children were killed. And Brooks, this was Brooks's best friend at the time, wanted to do something to honor his friend and the kids, and so started a golf tournament, raised a couple of $1,000s, and created a scholarship in the kids' names. That continued for a number of years until 1985, when he said, we got to do something more and bigger to help kids, and so that evolved into the Rainbow Connection. And so Rainbow Connection grants wishes to Michigan kids with life-threatening illnesses. So what does that mean? Well, it's a trip. It's meeting someone special or famous. It's having a shopping spree or doing something that you want to do that helps a child and, in our case, the entire family have a moment of joy, an experience that they'll always remember while they're battling and going through this very, very difficult time in their lives, and they don't have to worry about a thing. It's all handled. It's all arranged for them. They just have to go when the child is able to go on this wish. They're able to experience that.
If you want to learn more, www.rainbowconnection.org. Dave, could you tell us one or two stories about special kids?
Well, our very first, and this was long before I was involved in the organization, but the very first wish that Rainbow Connection granted was to a 16-year-old by the name of John Bowden. And he was at Children's Hospital of Michigan. And his wish was to meet Muhammad Ali, the greatest. And he did that. Muhammad Ali came to Children's Hospital of Michigan, met John. And that was obviously special, and we have photographs of that that are important to the organization to this day, the very first wish granted by Rainbow Connection. But of course, Ali being Ali, he went and also visited with and greeted many other children who were at the hospital that day. But that was the very first wish granted. We just had this past summer, Trent, a 10-year-old youngster who's been battling cystic fibrosis since he was 2 years old, went to Comerica Park, got to meet some of the Tigers, got to be on the field during batting practice, and had the opportunity to meet Miguel Cabrera. And he gave him his batting gloves and thought that was great, so much so that Trent teared up, and Miggy said, hey, you need to dry those tears. We need you to throw out the first pitch for the game today. And this 10-year-old youngster looked up at his dad and said, this is the greatest day of my life. Pretty cool. And the last one I'd share with you is young man Josh Elisiak, Chesterfield Township, melanoma, a high school student going into his senior year, good baseball player, good athlete, had to kind of redirect his interests as he was battling his illness. Loved cars, had a car, so his wish was to have that vehicle tricked out. And so we were able to do that for him, and he's so proud of his tricked out ride. And it's these kinds of things that we're able to do. The most often asked for wish is Disney World, and we're able to do that many, many times. 162 wishes granted last year to Michigan kids with life-threatening illnesses.
If you want to learn more, www.rainbowconnection.org. And one of the greatest men you'll ever meet in your life, Dave Llewellyn. And I'm Jack Rasulla, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasulla. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Dave Llewellyn, who earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from Central Michigan. And at Central Michigan, there's this famous statue of Dick Enberg. It's 11 feet tall. They want to give one to Llewellyn, but he's fighting. He's claiming it's got to be 13 feet tall.
Not true.
False news or whatever they call it now.
Yeah.
Dave, these kids, what have these angels taught you?
Well, I just feel fortunate to be in a position to, in a small way, help them receive these wishes. I'm fortunate. I have two kids, two healthy kids, son who's 26, my daughter who just turned 21 in November. How lucky am I that my children are healthy and not experiencing the difficulties that many of these kids and these families are experiencing? So I've just made it a point when I was invited to become part of the organization as a volunteer initially and then on the board, and now in a bit of a leadership role with the board, I've just made it a point and purpose that I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we continue to grow the organization through awareness and through financial support so that we can continue to provide these wishes and these opportunities for these kids. And we're so fortunate that so many of them, you know, overcome these tremendous challenges and issues in their lives and go on to be to live wonderfully productive lives. And one other aspect of our organization is we provide scholarships as well, college scholarships to our kids, you know. So whether they were sick at 2 or at 5 or at 10 or 15, you know, we also want to provide scholarships for education for them when they, you know, get to that point in their lives. And what a thrill that is to see so many of these kids overcome these challenges and then have that opportunity as well.
You've been watching miracles since 85 with this organization. And as you mentioned in the previous segment, the first wish granted was to Johnny Bowden. If Dave Llewellyn could have a wish granted of having a meal with anyone today, who would you sit down with to break bread?
Pope Francis. His humanity is so inspiring. I had the good fortune last fall of being in Philadelphia when Pope Francis came to the U.S., Washington, New York, and Philadelphia. And just to be, it's not like we had a one-on-one meeting or that meal, but just being there, being part of that experience, seeing the way the crowd, even from a distance, you know, as the little Fiat would go through the streets of Philadelphia, to see the way the impact that visit had, and it was a tremendous thing that I had the opportunity to experience, but just the humanity, the common touch. You know, I figured it'd be the closest to Jesus on earth that I would ever have the opportunity to experience. I just think that would be so moving to have that opportunity.
You've said in the past that your style is to be accurate and fair. Dave Llewellyn, you're the epitome of classiness and grace. How do I get that?
You have it. You're very kind. You're too kind. I just believe that that's the approach that, it works for me. And I think in this business, I think you need to be yourself. You need to be who you are. Because if you're not, I think people will see right through that. And I just believe in treating people the way I would want to be treated. And I think it begins really, and ends with fairness. So, you know, we come upon people in a lot of, in good times and in trying times and in bad times. And I try to be respectful of all of that. You know, imagine losing a child and, you know, I'm coming up and knocking on your front door because that's what we do, and that's what we are assigned to do. It's a very, very difficult thing, or an accident scene, and whether it's first responders and you're trying to get information. And I mean, I just believe it's the approach that one needs to take, and that's just what I've always tried to do is fairness and respect, and that's the way I want to be treated, and that's the way I want to treat others, and I hope that in every encounter, that's what I'm able to achieve.
You do that every day.
Thank you.
As our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Find something that you're passionate about, something that you believe in, something that will excite you every day when you wake up, because you're going to work for a long time, and it needs to be something that you care about deeply. That's my feeling. I've been blessed and fortunate that I've been able to, you know, make this this interest and this love of journalism and seeking out information and being able to tell information to others, that I've been able to, you know, make a livelihood, a career out of that, and hopefully done some good along the way, touching some folks in a positive way through personal interactions. But have passion, pursue it, don't take no for an answer. You know, be persistent. I think, you know, part of it is just showing up. But then you've got to be persistent, and you've got to pursue it, and you've got to have passion, and you've got to be excited. There's so many opportunities out here for us. Bust through that wall and go do it.
Dave Llewellyn, 38 years ago, you walked into this studio as a wide-eyed young intern. It's phenomenal what you've accomplished. Please keep it up.
Thank you, Jack.
You got a long run to go. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahn.